We have one comment from the Writer's Lens. The Writer's Lens writes, I used to respect you, but after hearing your commentary about Major League Soccer, I must say that I deeply admire you in new ways and countless fathoms that I was unaware of or could even be possible till now. That was my comment, that nobody is watching Major League Soccer, which is just the blank truth. The thing that is really on my mind a lot this week are the failures of conservatism. And this is not because I blame conservatives for the leftist violence and anti-Americanism sweeping the country. I blame the leftists. But the truth is, leftist ideas about race, about economics, about sex are all so stupid that we on the right, who offer freedom, wealth, and morality, must have really screwed up somewhere for their idiocy to spread as far as it has. So there are lots of things that come to mind when I think of our failures. I mentioned yesterday the cynicism of the Republican elite, the non-realistic approach of conservative intellectuals, and the sheer stinking cowardice and laziness of big-mouth cultural non-warriors. But there's something else. We spend a lot of time fighting the phony narratives of the left, but it's not enough to say the left is wrong. We have to explain why the right is right. We need a narrative of our own. I believe in religious tolerance, but I believe in it because I'm a Christian, formed by a Christian culture. Our founding religion, Christianity, is not social justice. It's not making tuna casseroles. It's not hating gay people. It has a content provided by Jesus Christ, who you may remember as the Son of the Living God. We should be preaching that content in the face of both leftist violence and capitalist greed. I'm a genuine philosophical anti-racist, but no one is going to help the black underclass until they start helping themselves like every other group has had to, and no one's going to change the past. It's all on them. I've always been a friend to gay people, but it isn't hateful to say that the male-female couple is the central building block of every healthy society and needs to be singled out for societal support. I support a woman's right to live any life she wants, but femininity, homemaking, and motherhood are the bedrocks of civilized human life, and if we don't uplift them, we'll go down in flames. Liberty is a great cause, but liberty depends on virtue, and sexual promiscuity, unchecked pornography, and unmannerly language and public behavior are not examples of freedom. They're threats to it. For too long, conservatism has found its all-in-all in capitalism. I'm a capitalist, but capitalism without values guts a society of everything but stuff, and that's what's happened to us. The ignorant, self-righteous, violent young people tormenting our cities and the cowardly, empty-hearted authorities bowing down to them are the creation of a culture without meaning. Money is not enough. Wealth is not enough. Even jobs are not enough. We need to remember what our country is about, and we need to sing that sermon. All right. So there's a preacher going around the internet. I just want to play a little bit of him. I do not know this guy's name. But he gave this sermon, and it's now going around Twitter. This is cut 14.
All the killing in our community ain't coming from white people. Come on, say amen if you can. We are killing one another. Our old people are scared to get out at night in their own community. They're not scared of white people. They're scared of young black boys on the street. Amen.
Now, I know a lot of us, we want to concentrate on what he's saying. The fact that it's the problems in the black community have to be solved by the black community, the problems of crime, the problems of sexual immorality, the problems of drugs and all these things that no defunding the police or white posturing is going to solve. And I think all of that is real. But what I want to focus on is just the pure gutsball courage of this guy and how easy it comes to him and the reason it comes to him. And the reason it comes to him is because he knows what he believes. He knows he believes in Jesus Christ, and that is supporting him when he could go out, they could send that around Twitter and he could be canceled in a minute. He doesn't care. I try to bring guys on this show all the time. Jesse Lee Peterson, Heather McDonald, John Nolte hasn't been on in a while, but these are people who say what they think no matter what. The first time I met Jesse Lee Peterson, I was like open mouthed. I was just like, you know, because of this, just the pure unbridled honesty of the man. He too believes in Jesus Christ. You can't have that courage. And remember, courage is the first virtue, right? This is Aristotle. Courage is the first virtue because without it, there are no other virtues. You need to have courage in order to have virtue. Courage, virtue always main, involves restraining yourself and going up against a non-virtuous society. It always does that. A virtue is always unpopular. It's always anti-societal. It's always anti-social. And so it requires courage. You can't have courage if you don't know what you stand for. That's what I want to talk about conservatives. If you don't know what you stand for besides money, you're not going to have that kind of courage. In fact, you're going to become a coward when money is on the line, and money is always on the line. Let's take, you know, we talked about this a little bit, but it had just come out. These Supreme Court decisions are released in the morning just as I'm preparing the show, and I don't want to come on and just blabber about them, but I want to take a closer look at this John Roberts decision, this amazing pro-abortion decision. I don't know what else to call it, because it's actually a bad decision. I mean, it was 5-4. What happened was that there was a Louisiana requirement that abortion clinics have admitting privileges at a hospital for the women in case something went wrong. Now, they do that with LASIK surgery. I mean, even if you have LASIK surgery, a lot of places you have to have admitting privileges at a hospital in case something goes wrong. You can get the person into a hospital right away. So they wanted the same thing for an abortion. Now, this was a law, by the way, passed by a pro-life Democrat, the pro-life governor. And it wasn't women who said anything about it. It was the abortion clinics themselves. They said this was an undue burden on them, right? So four years ago, a different court majority overturned a similar statute in Texas with Justice Anthony Kennedy as the guy who joined the four liberals. Justice Roberts said that that case was wrongly decided at the time. John Roberts said that case was wrongly decided. But in this case, he said, because that case was wrongly decided the way it was, this case had to be decided the same way because of precedent, right? So it's 4 years later, this precedent is now just embedded in Anglo-American law. It is now the bedrock. 4 years ago, they made a decision that John Roberts thought was wrong. And yesterday he comes out and he says, even though that decision was wrong, it's now right because it is the precedent. That's literally what he said. Now, it's even worse than this because nobody on the court except for Clarence Thomas, no one on the court said that Roe v. Wade was endangered. Only Clarence Thomas said that. And I'll read what he said in a minute. I'll read what he said now. He said the plurality and Chief Justice John Roberts cast aside this jurisdictional barrier to conclude that Louisiana's law is unconstitutional under our precedents. But those decisions created the right to abortion out of whole cloth without a shred of support from the Constitution's text. Our abortion precedents are grievously wrong and should be overruled. But he's the only one who said that. And everyone else was saying, well, this is an undue burden on women trying to get an abortion. So really, it does not seem to me, and I'm not a lawyer, so I'm not positive of this, but it does not seem to me that Roe v. Wade, which is one of the worst decisions the court ever made, it's up there with Dred Scott, and it's not just bad because of what it says, that they invented a right to privacy. And actually, I'm not opposed to that. I mean, there are rights that are not in the Constitution. There's the right to travel state to state. That's not mentioned in the Constitution, but we have a right to travel state to state. And I think there is a right to privacy implied in the Constitution. I'm not sure. We make fun of that a lot because that's when they started talking about emanations and the penumbras and all this stuff. But, you know, there are rights in the Constitution that are not enumerated. The Constitution is supposed to enumerate the powers of the federal government, but there can be implied rights. So that we shouldn't be afraid of that. But they're basically rights to be left alone. The right to be able to speak is the right to not be bothered while you're speaking. The right to worship is to not be prevented from worshiping. There's so many, all the rights in the Constitution are negative rights that are mentioned, right? And so I think there is a right to be left alone, to not be spied on, to not have the government like put a camera in your bedroom or in your house or anywhere where they can watch you. I mean, I think that there is a right to privacy. How that right to privacy strips the fetus, the unborn child, of a right to life, that's where they lose me. That's where they lose me. I always think we're fighting the wrong fight on this. That's where they lose me. I do not understand why a right to privacy, an implied right to privacy, because even the right to association is not in the Constitution, it's implied. An implied right to privacy, how that strips an unborn child of his rights, I simply do not know. So it's a really bad decision all around because nobody except Thomas, who is a man in full, and I'll talk about that in a minute, but no one except him stood up against Roe v. Wade. But what Roberts did What Roberts did is an extraordinary act of emptiness. To say that a wrongly decided decision from 4 years ago is now so embedded in law that I have to stick with it. Here's John Kennedy, who's always great for sound bites. He's from Louisiana, Senator John Kennedy. Here's his comment on it.
The Chief Justice today joined with the four liberals on the court to strike down Louisiana's statute. 4 years ago, in a case out of Texas, same statute, same issue, the Chief Justice voted with the conservatives. Today, he voted with the liberals. He changed his vote. He flip-flopped. He flip-flopped like a banked catfish. And that's why I say the process worries me as much as the result. This is why so many people think that our federal courts, our federal judges have become nothing but politicians in robes.
Well, you know, I think there's a really good argument for that they've become politicians. And that's really what I want to talk about, John Roberts. This is what I'm talking about conservatism. Really, since the Reagan era, conservatism has centered on capitalism. And there was some sense in that in the Reagan era when we were fighting communists. So we were the capitalists, they were the communists, and we were kind of defined by our enemies. But it has become gutted of meaning. And, I know we love capitalism, and I love capitalism, and I think it's a great system, and I don't even think it is a system. I think it's just fair trade. It's just trading with people. It's just what people naturally do. And it's wonderful. But it's obviously, just like any ism, without values, it's nothing. Without a structure of values, it's nothing. It is not conservatism to be a capitalist. It is not conservatism to be a libertarian to the point where you don't understand that some values have to be in place to remain in order for freedom to remain. Look how quickly our freedoms are being eroded. They're being eroded while we speak. People are being fired from their jobs for speaking their mind. People are in danger for speaking their mind. People are committing acts of vandalism while governors and mayors nod and say, oh, well, it's a fair expression of anger, right? Look how empty this is. John Roberts, now people are always speculating about his motives, and I'm going to do that. I'm going to speculate about his motives. But the one thing I can say that's not speculation is he can't possibly believe what he wrote in this opinion. He can't possibly believe that a wrongly decided decision from 4 years ago is strong enough precedent that stare decisis kicks into place, and forever after, that's the way these cases have to be decided. That he can't possibly believe that. No rational person could possibly believe that. After all, there used to be laws permitting slavery. Where are they? They're gone. You know, there used to be laws protecting children, the lives of children. Where are they? Things can be reversed. Important decisions can be reversed. Important precedents can be reversed. This is a nothing precedent, just something, as I say, that applies to people who have LASIK surgery. Why shouldn't it apply to people who have an abortion, that they have admitting rights? Maybe it was a tactic. It probably was a tactic to help the pro-life forces. But still, that doesn't mean that John Roberts believes what he said. And it's part of a pattern. This is part of a pattern on the way he acts, right? He is the guy who said that the insurance mandate was a tax, even in Obamacare, where they taxed you for not buying insurance. So the government suddenly had the right to fine you. They had the right to fine you for not doing something. Oh, you didn't go out and get exercise. That's going to be bad for your health. We're fining you for that. Once the government has that power, they have the power to force you to do anything they want. They specifically said when they passed that law that this is not a tax. John Roberts changed it because he did not want to override Obamacare. On the other day on immigration, right? Obama had an illegal executive order allowing the DACA people to stay when Donald Trump said he was going to overturn it. They said, no, you can't do that because your procedure is wrong. John Roberts said, your procedure is wrong. Clearly, this guy does not want to come up against the political forces of the Democrats. And remember, the Democrats have written him threatened notes. Remember that note they wrote him on the gun case where the Democrats, Kirsten Gillibrand, it was Sheldon Whitehouse was the big one, Mazie Hirono from Hawaii. They wrote him that note saying the Supreme Court is not well. Perhaps the court can heal itself before the public demands it be restructured to reduce the influence of politics. That was a clear threat that they were going to pack the court if John Roberts didn't toe the line. Nice court you got here, John. Be a shame if anything happened to it. John Roberts is playing politics. And of course, he thinks that he's showing the Democrats by bowing to the Democrats. He thinks he's showing them that he's not political. He's showing them that politics works. He has become an empty man. What philosophy does he have? What does he believe? What does he think? How does he think the law should be interpreted? He can't possibly believe that a wrongly decided decision from 4 years from now is now rock solid precedent. No, he's afraid of overturning Roe or threatening Roe. He can't possibly believe that Obama has the right to pass an EO, but Trump doesn't. He can't possibly believe that. It's because he is an empty man, and there's too many empty men on the conservative side. Way, way too many. This emptiness is true on when it comes to race, too, right? This is something we really need to be talking about. I wrote a piece for the Daily Wire a while back, not that long ago, called The Racial Matrix, in which I said, we don't have a race problem in this country. We have hostility toward a certain segment of the black population that commits a lot of crime. That's what we have. You can make it in this country if you are any color. Any color. People from Nigeria make it. People from Jamaica make it. People from Korea and China make it. Any color. Look, you may run into the occasional racist. It is only in these neighborhoods, these underclass black neighborhoods, that there is trouble. And that is the reason people treat innocent black people badly sometimes or prejudicially, because they're afraid they're a member of that class and they have no way to tell the difference. That's the problem we have. It's not a race problem. It's not a white supremacy problem. That's ridiculous. If it were a white supremacy problem, the Chinese wouldn't do so well. Chinese Americans wouldn't do so well. It's none of those things. It's not about slavery. It's not about Jim Crow. It is about the Democrat policies that have kept, that have created a patronage system that keeps this underclass under the heel of the Democrats, under the heel of politicians, and they don't want to give up that money. I'm talking about the politicians now, not the people in the neighborhoods. The politicians don't want to give up that money that they distribute that buys votes and buys power, and they don't want to give up the patronage of hiring people to fill all those bureaucratic roles that keep this system in place. That's the problem we have. And if we don't talk about that, we're not talking about anything. It's not blaming black people for being poor. It's not blaming black people when you're poor and then you get all this dysfunction that comes out, the drug use and the single parent families. That comes out of the poverty. The poverty, though, is created by the Democrat policies and created by the Democrat patronage system. That's what we're fighting against. And if we don't have the courage to talk about that, we're going to have all this craziness as they continue to do stuff that has no effect and helps nobody. In California, they got rid of the laws. But the California Civil Rights Initiative, there was a phrase, the state shall not discriminate against or grant preferential treatment to any individual or group on the basis of race, sex, color, ethnicity, or national origin in the operation of public employment, public education, or public contracting. Californians voted for that because they were against affirmative action. Everyone should be against affirmative action. It is one of the things that singles black people out, that says you're different from everybody else, that says you can't make it. You need the government. You need our kindly Democrat overlords to help you up the ladder. You're so crippled. You're so weak. You're so childish that you can't help without a Democrat to hold your hand and give you that extra boost. And now when you get a job, everybody thinks you got it unfairly because of affirmative action. It's a bad thing. So they eliminated, to keep it in place, they eliminated equal justice under the law. So all of this stuff, it just makes people more and more frustrated as nothing they do helps, because it's not meant to help. It's meant to keep black people under the heel of the Democrats. That's what it's there for. That is the reason it's there. So they have to do everything else. So listen to some of the stuff that's coming out. The global opinions editor of the Washington Post, this is the global opinions editor, she sent out a tweet that said, the lies and tears of white women hath wrought the 1921 Tulsa massacre, the murder of Emmett Till, exclusion of black women from feminist movements. 53% of white women voted for Trump. White women are lucky that we're just calling them Karens and not calling for revenge. This is a woman named Karen Atiya, the global opinions editor of the Washington Post, saying that white women are lucky they're not calling for revenge. She took the tweet down. She damn well should take the tweet down. But what kind of, I mean, that kind of hatred that's coming out and that is being excused, and the fact that the Washington Post isn't firing her, nothing's going to happen to her. Never mind her. CBS This Morning, Gail King, right? This is one of the top media posts in the country. She had D.L. Hewley, the comedian actor, comes on. He's got a book called Surrender, White People, Our Unconditional Terms for Peace. And Gail King said, I love the title. That's what she said. Now, Gayle King is in a position where she represents Americans. She is on the public airways in a major, major anchorwoman role. She represents everybody. She is there to entertain and inform everybody. How, if a white anchorwoman had a white author on who had Surrender, whose book was called Surrender Black People, Our Unconditional Terms for Peace, Surrender Black People. Oh, I love the title. I love the title. How, you know, I mean, really, that this kind of hatred is really infecting people because they can't see straight. They're not allowed. No one's allowed to tell the truth. You get fired and canceled for telling the truth. So nobody's going to say, we don't have a race problem. We have a problem with this small segment of society, 7% of the people who commit 50% of the murders. That's a problem. And again, and not entirely blaming them. Obviously, you have to blame the individual who commits the murder. Everybody's personally responsible. But I'm not entirely blaming the dysfunctions of poverty on the poor. What I am saying is this is 55 years of the same policies. Change the damn policies. Don't give us more of them. And people are filled now with this hatred and this kind of just absolute insanity. Instead, they're talking about defunding the police. I love this. They're talking about defunding the police, and people keep saying, well, defunding the police, you know, doesn't mean defunding the police. Here's Ocasio-Cortez, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Defunding police means defunding the police. It does not mean budget tricks or funny math. It does not mean moving school police officers from the NYPD budget to the Department of Education's budget. You know, in New York now, I told you this yesterday, they're killing people en masse. They've gone from the 2000s back to the 1980s like that in a finger snap because of Bill de Blasio. Bill de Blasio says he's cutting $1 billion from the police budget. Here is the so now outside of City Hall, they've this established a CHAZ, you know, another one of these areas, and they're just protesting this. And here is a spokeswoman for the Democrat Socialists of America. And here is what she said about cutting $1 billion from the police as the city is now just a gunfire zone. It's like Chicago. It's become like Chicago overnight. Bill de Blasio's New York is Chicago overnight after destroying the great, great city built by Giuliani and maintained by Bloomberg. Bill de Blasio has built a hellhole of gunfire. And here, and now he's cutting $1 billion out of the police budget. And here is what the spokeswoman for the Democrat Socialists of America says.
When we talk about defunding the NYPD, the other part of that is to fully fund social services. I can tell you on the encampment, it's obvious. We have some of the most vulnerable members of our community coming out to have their voices heard and participate in this encampment. And it's clear that what they're saying they need is services, mental health services, social services, adequate housing, you know, affordable health care, you know, the quality education. These are the things that the community is crying out for. And so it's not good enough to move money around and fancy accounting tricks. It's not good enough to just defund the NYPD even. We have to meet that with services that are fully funded as well.
They literally want to abolish the police. They could see the signs. If you weren't watching or just listening, there were signs, abolish the police. And of course, more dependency on the government is going to solve the problems created by dependency on the government. More dependency on the government is going to solve the problems created by dependency on the government. And no one can talk about it because if anybody talks about it, the courts, you can be sued. You can be sued for not having enough black employees. Not having enough black employees is not proof that there aren't enough educated black employees to do a certain kind of job. It's just proof that you're a bigot. And if you go in and you get sued for that, it can cost you billions. And if you get sued for that, and it turns out that one of your employees, maybe an executive, got in a cab and got drunk and said something racist, that can be used as evidence against you. So if you do say something racist, you're going to get fired. And once the left determines that the truth is racist, which is essentially what they have said, then you can get fired for telling the truth. And then the lies win. And that's the situation we're in. And so now you get, let's hear Elizabeth Warren on this. I just want to play this for 1 second, Elizabeth Warren's comment.
Being race conscious is not enough. It never was. We must be anti-racists. Removing the names, symbols, displays, monuments, and paraphernalia that honor or commemorate the Confederacy and anyone who voluntarily served it from military property is, in the broader scheme, only one step toward addressing systemic racism in our society. But it is an important step.
Let me tell you what removing those statues is going to do, and let me tell you what becoming anti-racist is going to do for black people. Zip. Nothing. Nada. Zero. Not one thing. That is cheap virtue signaling from Elizabeth Warren, and it's what they've been getting from the Democrats all these years. It's what they've been getting from the Democrats all these years is here's some money, go away and die. And we'll abort. And you know what? You get pregnant, we'll abort the kid. We'll abort the kid. We'll abort more black people than you can actually have babies. I mean, that's what the Democrats have been giving them. Instead of saying, you know what? All this sexual freedom stuff, not good. It's not good. You got to have some values. And are we saying it? No, we don't go into those neighborhoods at all. We do not send our politicians into the neighborhoods with that message at all. That's why I played that preacher. He has the guts because he has the faith, because he has something inside him that he believes in besides money. It's really, that's what gives him the courage to do that. All right. If you have not yet subscribed to DailyWire.com because you think it's too expensive or because you need healthcare or something like that, come on. I mean, come on. Priorities. We have a cheap version of our subscription plan. It is called Reader's Pass. It's only $3 a month. You can get the first month for 99 cents. You'll get access to our mobile app, which is great. The articles will be ad-free and access to exclusive editorials like this one from Matt Walsh. They never say me. Matt Walsh has what's called Activist Wants Reimagined to be our new anthem. It's the worst song ever written. Matt Walsh is 100% correct about that. It's not the second worst song. It is the worst song ever written. Also, Daily Wire's own Ben Shapiro has a new book out called How to Destroy America in 3 Easy Steps. I knew he was secretly evil. I knew he was planning to destroy America in 3 Easy Steps, and now he's releasing his evil plan. Oh, no, that's not what it's about. I'm sorry, I misread that. You can pre-order your copy of Ben's new book at dailywire.com/Ben or find it on Amazon or Barnes & Noble. The book covers 2 fundamentally different visions for America that are now on the table. One vision finds unity in shared philosophy, culture, and history. The other disintegrates our country in the name of fundamental change. Disintegrations use weapons like cancel culture to silence anyone or anything that disagrees with them. And we're seeing this in full display right now. Shapiro covers all of this ground and more. The book is called How to Destroy America in 3 Easy Steps. And it's not a plan. It's a warning. Again, pre-order your copy at dailywire.com/Ben, Barnes & Noble, or Amazon to get the full picture of this strange, strange moment in history. Come over to dailywire.com and subscribe. Tomorrow's the mailbag, isn't it? I forgot all about the mailbag. Don't forget the mailbag. You got to subscribe to be in the mailbag. You go to DailyWire.com, hit the podcast button, the Andrew Klavan podcast, hit that mailbag symbol and ask anything you want about religion, your personal life, politics. All my answers are guaranteed correct and will change your life, possibly for the better, just possibly for the better. And we love it if you send them in videos. Keep your videos in under 1 minute. They will not get preferential treatment. We will just go for the best questions. But if you have a good question and you want to say it on video and actually be on, we will play a video if it's under a minute. Come on over to dailywire.com and subscribe, and all your problems will be solved tomorrow. But, you know, to bring this back to us, because we don't have any control over them. We don't really have any control over the left. The left is going to be the left, right? That's why I'm not blaming conservatives when I talk about this. I'm just saying what we have to do. We have to start talking about what we believe and why we believe. It all starts with the individual. Society is important. The church is important. The way we live together is important, but the basic building block of life is the individual, and the basic building block of a society is an individual who is a man and an individual who is a woman coming together in a relationship that is going to produce the next generation and how they're going to do it. That's the way the world works, and we should be talking about that because it's real and because it elevates people who do real stuff instead of elevating every crazy person who has a new idea about how reality is going to look that has nothing to do with that actual thing that we call reality. These are the things we need to be talking about, and we need to be talking about them fearlessly or we're done for. I got to stop there. I'm out of time. I had more to say, but I'm going to stop. Tomorrow is the mailbag. DailyWire.com. Subscribe. Hit the podcast button, the Andrew Klavan podcast. Hit that little mailbag symbol. Send in your questions, video questions if you got them for under a minute, and I will solve all your problems. That's a guarantee we give. We actually sign a paper saying that we will solve all your problems guaranteed, and then we burn the paper and pretend it doesn't exist. But I'll be here on the Andrew Klavan Show. I'm Andrew Klavan. The Andrew Klavan Show is produced by Robert Sterling, executive producer Jeremy Boring,